selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. You know, okay, it's actually just so funny because what I love about Shopify is no matter how huge and massive you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control. Yes, daddy. And take your business to the next level because we're business women. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub. That's shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase. Shopify.com/bookclub.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Celebrity Book Club.
I'm so exhausted. I've been hiking the Pacific Crest Trail for 11 days. All I want in the world is some red wine and Snapple. My feet ache and... What is that? Two figures? Oh, God, it's two attractive young men hiking towards me. Oh, God, wow, they're beautiful. But could they be serial rapists?
Hey! Hey, little lady!
What's a pretty girl like you doing out alone in the woods?
Oh, God.
I'm Doug. This is my son, Tom.
And we're both 23.
Oh, hi. I'm Cheryl. Cheryl Strayed.
Strayed? That's a funny last name.
In that instant, I thought I shouldn't have told them my last name. These men, they were so attractive and knowledgeable and yet saying menacing things about my body.
That pack you have is big as shit, especially compared to your small, gorgeous female body.
Here, let me take a look inside that pack. Take it off and have a sip of my water that I purified.
Oh, God, thanks. Where would I be without you guys?
Huh. I can't believe that they found me attractive even in my disgusting, feral, totally homeless lesbian state of a hiker.
And hey, Cheryl, just wanted to say, you're exactly where you need to be.
They were so kind. I realized they didn't want to kill me, and that made me want to fuck them even more.
I can't believe you're doing this alone. A girl alone, blonde and soft. Here, why don't you join us skinny dipping in that little creek over there? We'll wash our dirty, dirty trail bodies. I won't look.
Okay, you guys are being weird. Let's have some iodine pills and go to bed.
But I knew in that moment all they wanted from me was a smile and the promise that I'd make it.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Celebrity Book Club. Come read it while it's hot. Celebrity Book Club. Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club.
Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hey, best friend.
How are you?
Okay. And that's okay to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty much the same. I'm not angry anymore. I'm not sad. I'm not excited. I'm just all of those things at once and nothing. And ultimately, I'm free.
I could say I feel so sad right now, but also the horniest I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah, well, nothing makes me feel horny like harrowing physical adventures
As I mentioned to you, I've been to Midtown and downtown Brooklyn and then back to Midtown already in one day.
That is actually insane. I'm still gripping with that. Like, you in Midtown at 9?
I had a dermatology appointment.
Oh, hell yes.
He said things are looking great. Thank you.
Oops.
And I'm just putting this out there for our listeners because I know people come here for medical advice, but you know, I have those little, maybe you don't know, I have small occasional red dots on my torso that some people have called cherry angiomas.
Huh.
And I did ask him about
them. I didn't know about that.
He said they're a completely normal part of aging.
Fuck yeah. Ooh, was that hard to hear? That feels like a different genre.
It was. And he said it like laughing almost maniacally in this way. They're like, ha ha, you're old. And he did say that I could pay him $325 to remove all of them. But it would be purely an aesthetic choice.
Because you're like going to the baths and the guys are like, ew, there's that old guy with a little red dot.
They're really small. I'm just going to say they're really small. They're freckles.
No, I've never even noticed them. And I've seen you nude
every
more
day.
Times than I want.
Anyway, it was the start of a very long journey that has ended here in the Red Studio, or as we call it, the Studio of Gods.
I'm so glad you're okay.
And why are we talking about journeys?
Why are we talking about journeys? Because we're doing an amazing book today that has rocked my fucking world. But we're doing it for a reason, because not just because it's a book and not just because it's a memoir.
Not just because it's by a woman.
Yeah, a blonde woman who's Gen X and 55. We're doing it because our dear coworker, I thought it was his favorite book, but it's actually his favorite movie based on this book.
Which is interesting, because as someone who has experienced both the film and the book, I would say, as usual, the book is better.
The book is way better, and we're going to get into that. But before that, please.
Welcome to the stage. You know him from his popular iHeart podcast. I always forget the name. What's it called?
Radio Lab.
No, that's not it, though. No. It's called
George
just like...
George and Sam it's called, like, Take an Adventure.
Yes.
The
yes.
Nikki Glaser Show.
It's called, yes, it's called the Nikki Glaser Podcast.
Please welcome Greek God, George Siverus.
And I just want to say, on my way here from Brooklyn, I forgave myself.
Yes.
I forgave you, Stephen. Queen. And I forgave you, Lily.
Oh, my God.
And
thank
I forgave
you.
My mother, my father, damn. Both my sisters, oh. And President Donald Trump. I said, clean slate starting now, mama.
Yes.
Let's see how the New Hampshire primaries go.
Let's go.
Because I'm forgiving left and right today.
And let's let the healing begin.
Let's let the healing begin.
I would like to start the healing with all of us cracking open one of the world's most refreshing drinks, Snapple.
But in the book we read, which we'll reveal, I guess, in a second, although you obviously know what it is already, she loves Snapple.
And specifically Snapple lemonade.
And she craves it while she's hiking the Pacific Crest.
Even though in her pre-PCT life, she didn't think twice about Snapple.
No.
So
she never thought about Snapple.
How when you're away from civilization, you'll suddenly crave things that were never part mm-hmm. of your daily routine. Okay, before we taste the Snapple, let me just say what the book is. Mm. We read, you know her because she wrote a book.
She wrote a book.
And she's one of those people, this rarely happens with us, where the celebrity's book that we read, they got famous from the book they wrote.
Yeah, she is a celeb because...
because of a book.
Because this book was so big.
Yeah.
And it was adapted into a film, I'll say it, starring none other than Reese Witherspoon.
Of course, we're talking about the book
Wild by... Cheryl Strayed.
And as I learned in this book, she made up that name.
That shook me.
That shook me.
Did
to
you
my
know
core.
That?
Unfortunately, I did know that from the film.
I guess I forgot that from the film.
I almost rewatched last night. And
I
then
decided
I
not
didn't,
to because I didn't want to spoil the book.
Because I was so in Cheryl.
Yeah, I remember the movie being like, that's fine.
Okay, so this is where we maybe disagree.
Wait, can I just taste the Snapple?
Please.
It's in this sad, kind of like ergonomic, like slightly womanly shaped bottle with the waist.
It's literally like exercise water.
Yeah, it's very crystal light coated.
Yours is pink with sugar.
Yeah, we
ours are both sort of Arnold Palmer.
Because I thought you'd be more into full.
I mean, I definitely, zero sugar freaks me out, so thank you.
And I actually just wanted the half and half to me, because my old favorite flavor used to be, when I was a camper, peach.
Me too. I was about to say peach.
It had this.
All right. You guys are being very like random, like girl Twitter that goes viral. Just being like, did anyone else love peach Snapple, or was that just me? 200K likes.
Sounds it's like you're jealous.
Sounds,
you're
sounds
not
like
in
everyone
the peach
likes
Snapple.
Peach Snapple.
I'm peach Snapple years old.
Okay. I do have to say this is incredibly sugary. It's very country time for me. It tastes like I'm at the Nantucket airport and I'm six. And I'm ordering this at the restaurant.
Can I ask you something?
Please.
Do you find this caffeinated? Because I do feel buzzing.
Yeah, I feel high because I'm amongst like really cool thinkers mm-hmm. right now. But I don't know if that is you guys and me feeding off this energy or the zero sugar.
I'll say, though, the taste is good. The taste has a, and it's the sugar that has a almost like a starchiness that grabs on to the inside of your mouth. A tannin, if you will.
This half and half, I'm not complaining.
I want you to taste the full sugar just so you can see what Ooh. I'm talking about. Because I can imagine hiking the 2,320 mile trail.
Oh, would you like to taste the half and trail,
right? That sugar's grabbing
That's
hold.
That's country time.
Yeah. But can you imagine really craving that while you're hiking
yes.
for a day?
That and ice oh, cream wow. cone See, and a huge dick. Cheryl Strayed, if I just may, is one of the horniest women on planet Earth, which is so cool. And I felt like they didn't really show as much as they could have in the movie.
Yeah.
And they showed it in Tiny Beautiful Things starring Catherine Hahn on Hulu.
Well, Catherine Hahn is better at being horny than Reese Witherspoon.
Very 100%. Much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad you made me watch Tiny Beautiful Things, which is adapted from her book of advice columns, Dear Sugar.
Dear Sugar.
And Catherine Hahn plays Cheryl Strayed in that as like a messy advice columnist who can't get her life together, but she's giving advice to people.
And it was like at the beginning of like cool literary blogs.
It was on The Rumpus.
The Rumpus, right.
Which is very like Gen X writers. There's this whole kind of writing community that she's a part of that are very into writers' retreats. And it reminded me of the whole kidney saga yes. from last year.
But it's also like it's Dan Savage, Lindy, like all those Pacific Northwest writer type people are also, I feel like, in the same universe.
I guess what I don't understand about that whole culture is yeah. all these people are like writing essays. Okay, about what? Who asked? They're sharing them with each other and they're like writers groups. And it's like, what's this all for? Like, why don't you just
for
go?
For the rumpus.
But it's just like, why don't you go, I don't know, move to New York and move in literary circles.
Well,
and like,
no, that's no, the, no, no, no. That's the whole point is they're rejecting this New York City in literary circles. It is about being punk, walking the trail. It's about getting married and doing heroin.
No, and I'm
and
obsessed
writing.
With all the
you
heroin
can't
and
actually
the marriage.
No, definitely do heroin, but honey, do it in New York. So when I did a show in Seattle recently, a friend of mine from college came and he lives in Seattle and he was like, you know, I didn't see your show listed in the alt weeklies. I'm so glad like so-and-so told me about it. And it occurred to me, people in Seattle and Portland
read
alt weeklies in a way, even now, and I'm sure more than in 1995.
Right.
But there is a real attention to the local literary scene.
Which I think is great, obviously. Like, conceptually, politically, I agree with mm-hmm. that. And yet, as a personal choice, I'm just like, but if you wanted to be a writer, what are you doing going to, like, one of these, like, retreats and, like, you know,
But then, you
Buckthorn,
know, a lot of people
Montana.
Say, you've said it yourself, you're like, oh, I could write my book, except I have too many restaurants to go to.
It's true.
Yeah, and I have some news for you. She still lives in Portland, Oregon. Never made the move.
Yeah.
I see one, two. And I see mad best-selling books.
Mad best-selling books. I'll say she's probably more successful than all three of us.
Oh, no. Yeah, 100%. 100%. But, you know, isn't she the exception to the rule?
Dan Savage.
Lindy West.
Yes.
Lindy West.
Okay. I mean, the three Furies of the Apocalypse.
And
or
it's
whatever.
Like, okay, when Elizabeth Gilbert moved back to New York to care for her lesbian dying.
Right. She didn't write a single thing.
No, she didn't. So
no. Right. I don't remember the last time someone who lived in New York wrote anything, actually.
Okay. Fair enough. And I will move and then I will write my book.
Yeah. Maybe a trend piece for the style section.
No, I know.
You did a really good, I feel like, summary of what Dear Sugar. The vibe it was, where basically she turned like advice column like on its ass.
It's someone being like, I'm contemplating a career move, and she writing back like, I was a paraplegic by age 4.
And sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
You need it to put it all in perspective.
But so on my way here, I was like, because I finished the book, didn't have time to do any other additional reading, but I was like, I need something else. And so I just searched on the podcast app, Cheryl Strayed. The first thing that came up was her on Brooke Shields' podcast.
Oh, which also records here.
It was
well,
actually
shout out.
Produced okay. by our producer, Darby.
I have nothing negative to say about it. So
okay, let's go.
But Cheryl was like, you know, when people ask me questions, my job is to close read what they're saying and say it back to them because people are afraid of the things they already know.
That's so therapist.
So sit with that.
Chilling.
And you know what else she said? She's never done therapy. She said that to Brooke Shields. Okay. I mean, she famously did do some court-mandated therapy.
Could you walk up to Brooke Shields and say, I've never done therapy? Could any of us?
And then Brooke was like, girlfriend, I am so jealous of you. All I do is therapy.
Girlfriend. Okay, to get into the book for a second, reading this, I was like, wait. Because I have been thinking like, oh, should I start therapy again? Because I stopped because therapists
like,
kept on canceling on me. And now I'm just
hiking.
Like, I'm doing the PCT.
Okay. Oh, we're
Are
oh,
we all going. After the book? Was
no,
everyone like, I'm doing the
was
PCT?
Was there such a, I assume there was a massive like eat, pray, love, like influx of kind of
there must have
carpet bagging.
I think so. And I think both in the book and even in the film, which I believe parts of it were actually filmed along the PCT, it was almost a form of activism on her part to be like, part of this is promoting nature walks and the PCT.
And she does speak beautifully about the history of the trail. She kind of like tosses in her Wikipedia moments throughout the book where she's just like, and it was originally the dream of a woman
from
Bellingham, Washington State.
Well, she'll have this like pages long description of the most harrowing parts of her childhood and then be like, in 1947, one woman had a dream.
For a while, I honestly stayed away from this book because I thought it was going to be so Wikipedia. And like
For years, you've been passing wild
and been like,
in
no,
the aisles.
No, and I thought it was just going to be kind of like boring and about walking. And it's way less Wikipedia than I thought.
No,
and
this book is gripping.
It's gripping. It's powerful. I cried at different moments.
As I mentioned to you, I just was sobbing at the Hilton finishing this in the middle of a realtor conference.
Well, you walked in, I must say, tears, and I'm not exaggerating for comedic effect, tears streaming down your face and snot quite literally in your mustache.
I was ugly crying.
I was in big, ugly West Virginia having a big, ugly cry. I mean, the end is insane. And it's actually not that hard to stick a landing in a book like this because you're crying because the journey is over and the journey's so insane. But oh my God, when she finds out that Doug dies.
I know.
In a kite sailing accident in New Zealand.
So Doug is someone she meets along the way. You know, people who hike the PCT, you know, they're adventurers.
Yeah. Type T thrill seekers.
Okay, so you're going to go to New Zealand. You're going to kite sail.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like she heard about one of the people dying in the Sierra Nevada in the snow.
Well, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop with Greg. Like, was Greg going to go hike it again the year after and then die?
I also kept being like, wait, is this the guy she meets and eventually becomes her husband?
I also thought
in like a very eat, pray, love way.
I thought that was going to be a reveal too.
And I won't reveal whether or not that's a reveal to people who do want to read the book. It's so harrowing to be like there with her every step of the way. She really does take your hand as a, and we can get into her writing, whether or not she is one of the greatest writers of the generation or not.
I think after reading this, I'm going to say.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think definitely when I compare her to the books we often read, I think.
Right. It is crazy to read this book and you're like, oh, I see why you became famous for writing this memoir versus, let's say, people who become famous
who are celebrities and then write a book.
Yeah. Well, memoir writing is such a tough genre for that reason because basically it's 50% like Mary Carr, like people that are truly talented at the art of memoir, and then 50% fully Megan Fox.
Talented in her own right.
Yes. And just to be fair, Megan Fox wrote a book of poetry, not a memoir.
Okay.
And she may yet prove to be a talented memoirist.
Wait, so George, just let's get it out of the way. You think the movie is better?
No, I don't think the movie is better. I just think
it's the best movie of all time.
I would say, obviously, the book. Listen. Okay.
Speak.
Here's what I'll say about the movie. So let's be honest. For me, I watched the movie in theaters. I'm not saying this to try to pretend I'm somehow more sophisticated than I am, but just in terms of my tastes, I can't stress enough how I'm not the kind of person that normally would gravitate towards a narrative like this. Like, I thought going in that it was going to be some eat, pray, love thing of like a really privileged woman trying to like force herself to be bisexual and like whatever. And I really did not expect to be moved by the movie as much as I was like bawling essentially for the last 50% of the film. And the final sequence of the film, which I actually think is really beautifully done, basically starts with the little boy singing.
Yeah.
So
that moment.
In the book, there's this little boy who is troubled in some way.
His has an angelic voice.
has an angelic voice, and basically is like, want to hear me sing? And she's like, sure. And then he sings in this like beautiful voice.
It reminded me of the soprano I used to have in middle school when I sang Maria in West Side Story. And I remember we had a choral director woman with like triple Fs. Yes. Do you remember her? And like, I was kind of her like little gay soprano protege.
She was like an actually trained opera singer.
Yes.
Sorry, and she was in middle school.
Sorry, middle school.
Is this your Newton private high school? No.
Cambridge. It was Cambridge. Cambridge. Okay.
George.
Yeah.
The intellectual crucible of America.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I remember her being just like,
where writers
gotta,
live.
Where writers live. Her going, I got to take you on tour.
Stop.
Because I was such a freak little faggot with my high voice.
Imagine baby Steven being the one to make Cheryl finally cry with his voice singing as a soprano. Okay, wait. The final sequence basically starts with the little boy singing. Then Cheryl is like, okay, goodbye. And then the boy leaves. And as soon as she's alone, she basically breaks down crying. Like, mm-hmm. she hasn't cried the whole film. And hearing the beauty of the little boy's voice is what finally makes her break down. And then the music crescendos, and then that really takes you, like, through to the finale. So it's just, like, little boy, and then it goes into the monologue that's, like, what if I forgive myself? What if heroin taught me something? Blah, blah, which, of course, always makes me bawl. Yeah. And then it's, like, her at the end on the bridge being, like, I would come back to this bridge with the man that I would eventually marry.
Oh, right.
And my daughter, Bobby, named after my mother.
No, I know. I mean, I was just, like, that whole ending also really reminded me of the end of 6 Feet Under, how you fast forward into the future and you see like all these different things, and like there is just this incredible moment of the cosmos coming together, and you're only ever one moment in time. You can never know what happens to you, but you're always where you need to be. Mm-hmm. What if you do forgive yourself?
I mean, when she says, what if I forgive myself, I lose it every time, because that really just takes you through to the end. And to say like, what if heroin taught me something, like there's something so brave about that entire monologue.
And she reveals the traumas in a piecemeal way over the course of the book. She does a great job doling them out, where it starts out with the mom's cancer, mom's dying, mm-hmm. two young moms only in her early 40s dying of cancer, and it's traumatic. And then it's like revealed that she actually got a divorce right after that. And then it's revealed that she actually got into heroin. And it's like, oh, she's really
and
like...
she's still in love with the husband, but doesn't want to be with
him. And she sabotaged the marriage by like serially cheating on him, just like dead-eyed dissociating just because she wanted to like fuck it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, I saw it in theaters and then I sort of became obsessed with it. Never actually read the book, but I would say I have watched the movie 7 or 8 times.
Oh my God. Since
okay, so it's kind of a yearly.
And it almost became this like private, like silly, like meme with myself where I was like, isn't it so funny? Like,
yourself.
Isn't it so funny that I randomly love the movie Wild?
Yeah,
gay
like,
guy obsessed with his own lore.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
shocking.
And then I had this idea where I was like, which again became like a little meme that I had with my friends from college, where we think that every year they should remake it with a different actress, and it should be sort of like Shakespeare.
Oh, that's genius.
Because it is actually a perfect role for a film actress, because it's so much emoting on camera. And you could see Charlize doing it. You could see...
Oh, I could really see Charlize,
Charlize would be
doing
better than
it.
Reese. I'll say, okay, comparing the Han to the Reese, Catherine Han in the new Hulu
Catherine
show.
Catherine Han is so much more... probably accurate to Cheryl Strayed
yes,
in a way,
no.
but she's also doing different things
she's
with
too,
it, which I'm
here's
into.
My Tiny Beautiful Things is ultimately the exact same as like every other show that's on Hulu that are all like coastal elite, coastal ennui, just like started with like Friends with Money and then it never ended, where it's just always like, I'm a 40-something woman, but I can't keep a job. Oh, I'm a mess. We're need a croissant and there's getting flakes all over my top. Is my husband going to leave me?
Literally my favorite genre where it's a 44-year-old woman and then it cuts to her getting fucked in her Acura in a parking lot and her cell phone's like buzzing and she hasn't come yet and she's just like, oh, I have to pick.
No. Here's the thing is that Reese is too prissy and uptight, I think, to really capture her like working class struggle. However, I think Catherine Hahn is also too coastal to capture her Minnesota struggle. So I do think Reese achieves a kind of, as a Southern girl, achieves a non-coastalness, a regular personness that I think like works in the movie.
I think Reese's acting is very good in the movie. And I do agree with you that I think she connects to it on a deeper level than just women's stories matter.
Well, she produces she. I feel like that was one of the first books that, right, Reese was like, I'm taking this, we're doing this, I'm turning
it
into a movie.
It's when Reese decided I'm getting the back interest.
Yeah. Well, because she was like, I can be because this was after like a prolonged, she won the Oscar for Walk the Line and then did a series of true flops. Like, she did like This Means War and like all these like bad rom-coms. And so this was like her big comeback where she was like, I'm taking my career in my own hands because all the scripts that are getting sent to me are like Sweet Home Alabama, but worse.
Yeah. And not realizing that the rom-com era had ended with 27 Dresses, definitively.
Right.
That was the last movie.
And like, you
bring back rom-coms.
Celebrity Book Club.
It was that summer. That summer, I started using Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes elevated loungewear and amazing, luxurious, soft bedding that surpasses even the finest hotel sheets for a restful night's sleep on your travels or at home. I love Cozy Earth so much that I got it as a present for my spouse. And the things that happened on that bed, you wouldn't believe it. I got their joggers and oh my God, it almost feels like you're nude, better than nude. It feels like you're swimming in the most luxurious ocean. So stay cool and comfy during long flights with Cozy Earth's temperature regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew, adding a touch of style to your travel ensemble. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code CBC at checkout to get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after checkout, okay?
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Celebrity Book Club.
Wait, okay. My one final thing that I want to say about Reese is, yes, her acting is good, but she does not ugly herself up enough in that movie. She never actually
dirty, because in the descriptions that Cheryl gives and about being dirty, it's like, honestly, now that I've been to Portland, I'll say this. I'm just like,
you've seen dirty.
I'm just like, you are so this mix of like hippie, punk, dirty, Jerry Garcia, alternative girl, and you are dirty. And it's like the scene that I remember of Reese taking off the boots. The only scenes really, it's like, I remember the movie just being about boots hurting and Snapple.
I'm telling you, rewatch it. You're going to be moved.
I'll rewatch, but I was, and then it's like, in this, I'm so moved.
Course,
I'm just like, this is so much more than boots.
Of course.
Have y'all ever been fitted for boots at REI?
Wait, I can't believe we're doing sex already.
About REI.
I mean, have you guys like gone, have they like made you like jump on planks and like.
I love when she describes like how knowledgeable every employee at REI. They all came from different levels of adventurousness and hiking know-how, but at the end of the day, they knew their gear.
They know gear. Yeah. I don't know when REI came about.
But I
feel like the 90s was really its rise.
I don't know if REI is still like this. I kind of assume it isn't because anytime I've ever been to a store, no one is like,
well, that's very New York City.
New York, where no one writes books and the REIs are too crowded.
No, REI in New York is hell. But I will so after I watched Wild for the first time, I did go to Iceland by myself and I did go to REI to purchase.
Wait, did you sob viewing the Northern Lights?
Well, I was alone hiking for my birthday. Let's just say that.
Wait, so you fully wilded it after?
Well, it was the most safe gay guy recent college grad version of wild. It was very much like me looking up like
tons of money in your bank account.
Literally like Airbnb experiences hiking. Day long, picked up by a bus that takes you to see ponies but not touch them. Okay. And then you hike to the hot springs. But anyway, when I went to REI for that trip in San Francisco, it did very much feel like how she described it. Like, everyone was being very helpful. And I have those boots to this. I mean, again, my hike was not as arduous as this one, so they sort of still look new. But but I do have them to this
day. They look brand.
Dag on.
And I actually wore them when I had my Halloween costume at Cheryl's Trade this past Halloween.
Which you're going to need to send us photos.
Well, of course.
High res,
oh,
please.
Don't worry. They're on my Insta. Okay. But yeah, I'll send high res.
One of my favorite parts, it's a flashback, she's in the hospital, her mother is dying, and one of the male nurses come in and she's like, I could see the outline of his cock in his like white nurse's pants, and I needed him to like take me now.
Horniness for her is actually an intellectual, it's a way of processing trauma.
Yeah.
She's like, well, when my mom was dying, I was into that guy's dick.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, she was like, well, I got married also almost out of trauma because she needed something like stable in her life.
Yes.
Where just like she was like, her father was abusive. And then her mom got with this guy who was like, fine, Eddie. And then she's like, well, I'm going to start my own family. Like, kind of, fuck you guys. And that was her rebellion of marrying young. And then when the mom gets sick, she needs to feel out of control.
Ironically, she got married the same age her mom did at 19.
Mm. And then
after saying that she would never be her mother, and she finds herself doing the same thing.
And then wasn't that crazy when she has an abortion, she realizes her child would have been born on her mother's 50th birthday?
Yeah.
I'm just saying these
are you guys into numerology?
These are just moments in the book I didn't get in the movie is all I'm saying. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, where, the like, book is always going to be more dense. Reading this book, you know, you get a sense of how exciting it is to be a heterosexual woman. Because
and terrifying.
Yeah, well, yeah, and what is more exciting than terror?
Of course.
Every man she meets can either kill her or fuck her. And she is constantly sizing them up. And so there's this whole thing where every time she like meets a new man on the trail, she's always listing their race, age, height, weight,
beard,
like,
facial hair.
Beard, facial hair, clothing. Like almost as if she's telling the police officer like who's reading this after she's been killed. Like there's always just a, okay, like what are they going to do? He kind of smiled coyly. And like there's all these little signals that maybe mean that he's going to kill her. And then she's also just being like, he was attractive. Well, I found the nape of his neck to be wildly erotic. And after 7 days of never having been touched, all I could think about was him pressing his male body against mine. I shivered.
Here's a question I want to ask
you guys.
Then
he reached for his gun.
Where it makes you think about being really stuck in a desert island where it's like when she's camping with like one of the guys, I forget which one, and she's very like, I'm actually not attracted to him. But then she's wishing that he would knock on her tent. Do you think you, on the PCT, could fall in love with anyone?
Or, of course.
I kind of feel like, yeah.
Period.
Like,
period, bitch. I mean, it's so like when you go to Honcho, you know what I mean? Like when you go to like
it's
a game.
So Honcho.
It's so Honcho.
Cheryl Strayed, you would have loved Honcho.
I mean, she almost goes to like a straight Honcho in this
book. Oh my God.
I Rainbow Festival?
They try to go to Rainbow Festival.
When she lights up at the mention of Rainbow Festival, she's like literally hiking in order to overcome her trauma. And the second someone's like, want to go to a party? She's like, oh my God, you guys, I went last year. It was so much fun.
It was so amazing. And like, okay, let's go through some, the favorite moments.
Yes.
When a guy gives her a Bob Marley t-shirt on the trail and it changes her life. And
Paco. And then everyone she meets along the way
is
just like
nice
fucking gnarly ass tea, dude. That's so cool. I mean, they're all acting like they've never seen a Bob Marley tee before. Like, it's not the most like common iconography.
Like it was
of the 90s.
And it like had a quote on the back.
Well, and it was like, if you have this t-shirt, you'll be one with the spirits or something. Like
actually the most you've walked into a hippie store in a college town where like you're buying a Bob Marley t-shirt and some incense and someone's like, once you have this, man, you're one with the lions.
Okay, wait, let me read this passage. There is a sex scene in the book.
Mm.
And when she is in this town right after Jerry Garcia dies. And
she's in Ashland, Oregon.
And everyone's like mourning in Oregon and they're all
well,
like,
they're also like, hey, have you heard the news? Yeah. She's like, what? They're like, Jerry died. She's like, fuck.
There is like a different version of this book where the news would have been like 9/11 or something, but it's so fitting that when she finally re-enters society, everyone's like, have you heard?
So she meets this guy in a Wilco t-shirt, which we'll get to. He leaned forward and kissed me again, and I kissed him back with more fervor than I had before, and we stood there kissing and kissing between his tent and his car and the corn and the flowers and the stars and the moon all around us, and it felt like the nicest thing in the world, my hands running slowly up into his curly hair and down over his thick shoulders and along his strong arms and around to his brawny back, holding his gorgeous male body against mine. There hasn't ever been a time that I've done that, that I haven't remembered all over again how much I love men.
When I read that, I was like, okay, Stephen and George.
Well, what was so...
You guys every said time, it's fucking being like, fuck.
I see in your notes, Lily, that the first thing you have is, I have sex like a guy, which is a quote she tells a therapist early on. But
she's
I do think,
Samantha,
like, that description of that
the PCT.
Guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's literally like,
Samantha. Is this Samantha? PCT?
She's getting to every camping lodge being like, so. But, like, there is a version of this story she could have told if she wanted it to be more commercial, where she's like, emphasizing the connection she had with this man. But she very openly is like, he was kind of uninteresting. He was like sort of stunted. He was not answering any of my questions or asking me any questions.
I was obsessed with her.
All
she's
they could
like,
do was talk about music.
All they did was talk about music.
And Wilco.
She was sort of like, okay, I see. We're not going to connect at an intellectual level. But he's hot and I need to be dicked down because it's been a while and I haven't even masturbated this whole time, which she also
she was,
says
yeah,
in the
she
book.
Was like, I was too like raw.
How often do you think you would masturbate, Lily?
On the PCT?
If you were... 6 weeks.
I feel like every other night.
Same. I'm like, it's all that you have to
it's
do.
Like, yeah, but then it's like, I feel like some nights you probably are like, this is a meme with myself.
Sure.
I'd be like, ugh, I'm too tired tonight.
Oh, totally.
It's rolls
that's
like, over.
That's a classic Lily.
That is a classic Lily. Yeah.
Oh, wait, when you're alone?
Just... Yeah, alone. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, you know, being like, I can't tonight, I'm too tired.
That's cute. I feel like I'd save it up like a week at a time.
Really?
I mean, without any like porn or anything, I feel like I'd be a little bit like, well, all right, we'll go to bed.
No imagination.
I don't know.
I have an imagination. I totally have an imagination. I totally imagine stuff all the time. I can get hard just sitting around. It's called a psychogenic erection. It happens to me every day. But
don't you feel like you would be like nearing a spring and accidentally see some man bathing and then be like, well, I have to go behind a tree right now.
Oh, and like watch him.
No, I was more thinking. No. I was more thinking like not like watch him and masturbate, just like sort of take that a mental snapshot and then.
But I do feel like, right, some nights would be like as she literally had an ice axe, like her toes are killing her. Like there are some hard.
You can't know there. Unless you've been in the situation. Right. And who's, I mean, yes, sure, now I'm like, I do it every night. But if I'm
maybe
there,
out
maybe
there.
I'd be tired.
I guess my main thing would be like the material of the sleeping bag.
Mm.
I don't like the idea of cum, if I can say that. Like,
and
drying
you're like,
on that. It's like, it's getting crusty.
Well, you wouldn't
on that
come
kind of,
on the sleeping bag.
You might.
Well, you might. You can't always control where it ends up, George.
Well, maybe
we're not all mathematicians like you.
And maybe
glasses.
You're in your like rain gear, and she's always being like, "Well, I put on my rain gear as I headed into bed and read William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying," which I remember once I started to read, and you roasted me, and you were like, "Bitch, you're not going to finish that."
Wait, that's so mean of me. I want you to finish Faulkner,
and I didn't finish it. So.
Well, there was one part where she was like fully lost, and she was like, "That's it. I'm reading Lolita. Like, I cannot. I actually need to."
just like set up camp right now and read some literature because we are not getting anywhere, y'all.
I just want to read right before they have sex because this just made me lol. And we were talking about it before about this folk singer. So this is also just like in such a good time and very Portland of the musicians they mentioned of just like Bob Marley, Wilco. Like, so they're sitting there and they're chatting and he goes, I've seen Michelle Schacht live 3 times, Jonathan said. 3 times? One time I drove through a snowstorm for the show. There were like only 10 people in the audience. Wow, I said, realizing there was no way I was going to keep my pants on with a man who'd seen Michelle Schacht 3 times, no matter how repulsive the flesh on my hips was. And this just killed me because Michelle Schacht is a lesbian-looking, homophobic folk singer from the 90s who had a song called Anchorage that's very Cheryl Strayed, that's about like writing to your friend about like actually how bad your life is going to.
Oh, she's very letters. A lot of letters. A
lot of letters. And Michelle Schacht is just like literally so butch, but like in the 90s or like early 2000s.
Was she came, like in she was like Fair era?
Yeah, but she was almost even like too leftist for Lilith Fair. Okay. But it was that same era. And then she was like, God hates fags. And everyone was like, what?
And by the way, that was in 2013. Yeah,
it's like recently.
I was like looking this up. So in 2013, in a concert in San Francisco, out of nowhere, she goes on this homophobic rant against gay marriage. And then part of it is literally her being like, you can put it in the paper that Michelle Schacht says God hates fags. And then, like, the rest of her tour was canceled and she was never heard from again. Because her entire life, she'd been what we would now, you know, in contemporary parlance, called queer baiting by literally looking like a huge
like
lesbian.
She looked like Katie Lang.
Wow. She was like, she was so Lilith Fair, so Indigo Girls. Like,
is she like from the Midwest in like a short, spiky hair
way? Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know where she's from. She's probably from the Midwest or Northwest.
And Lily was saying she's Christian.
Yeah.
Which is where
in this like Christian leftist way. And I was like, did she have an affair with a Lilith Fair other musician? What happened? And I just love that also Cheryl Strayed is like ultimate straight girl, but who loves like Wilco, Michelle Schacht.
Oh,
and, like,
of course.
Speaking of gay guys, she meets a gay guy on the trail.
Rex, right?
Yes, the only man who's not like a possible threat or liaison. He was a big red-haired guy, gregarious and gay and 38 years old. He struck me as the kind of person who gave a lot of bear hugs. It's just like how to call someone a bear without saying it. Just be like, he was a big, gay, bear-y kind of person who had bear vibes to him.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't become closer friends because I'm like, don't
we? Then she gets jealous that he kind of is friends with Stacy, who she kind of calls basic at one point.
Oh, I loved that.
Yeah.
She was at some point after like becoming friends with Stacy, she's like, yeah, she was kind of giving girl that works in HR.
And Rex has a corporate job that she found like completely like unexplainable.
And basically, Rex and Stacy were both sort of like PR gay, PR girl. And so they bonded. And Cheryl was like, hello, doesn't anyone like my homemade necklace?
Yeah, it says straight on it. Anyone else like doing heroin? Anyone else mom died?
Yeah.
People are always like, okay, heroin girl.
Okay, heroin girl, dead mom, we get it. You're weird. And but then people are always like, do you want to hike like the next section with us? And she's just like, I need to do this on my own.
Yeah. Right. And they're like, okay.
My question is, that whole time, is she secretly in her mind going, I need to do this on my own because I also need to write like a blockbuster memoir about this?
I think she was more like, I promised myself this and I have to see it through. I also love this moment where she meets those like 3 women on the trail and she's so relieved and is so excited and is like, finally women, I don't have to be afraid. And then those like 2 strapping men like come and she's like, for some reason, I felt I was more like people with Doug than like the 3 hippie 50-year-old Cambridge moms. And it's like, you are.
I bet you did. I love when she's also slightly bitchy. She meets that other woman who she describes as having like acne scars. And this woman goes, you're so pretty. You'll be okay, whatever you do. Me, people always just gotta go on the fact that I'm good-hearted. I never did have the looks. That's not true, I said. I think you're pretty. You do? She asked. Yeah, I said. Though pretty wasn't precisely how I would have described her.
Well, and by the way, this is
so
this is right after she found out that woman had lost her son.
Yeah.
And Cheryl was like, well, she wasn't a looker.
Yeah. Like, just still being so cutting. Pretty wasn't precisely how I would have described her.
But I actually, to me, this is what makes her not like a completely full of shit inspiration porn writer.
Reliable narrator.
Exactly. Like, she actually is a real she's not only advice column.
I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, as somebody said to Tina Brown once that she said to us in her book that she wrote, you can teach people how to write, but you can't teach them what to notice. Mm. And it's the observations that make the writer. However, there are times, because we were at a screening the other day and I told someone I was reading Wild.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I hate people who pretend to be good writers but aren't good writers.
Referring to
Cheryl Strayed. And at first I was like, well, that's kind of an easy thing to say about someone. But then I was like, I kind of know what you mean, because I do feel like there's this way where she like is almost like too vulnerable and is like using all the vulnerability to kind of telegraph. Like,
so you think cashing in on the mom chips and the heroin?
I think more there's like sometimes a cliche, like there is one part where she was like flotsam. And when people talk about like emotional shipwrecks, I'm always just like a little bit like, that's kind of a cheesy crutch red flag for me.
Not to fully disagree, but I was like, considering how much trauma porn this could have been, I felt like she always held it
under,
like it was restrained, and then there would be like the one paragraph that would destroy you. Like so much of it really was just like, and then I got to the other campsite, and then I got to the other campsite, and then I threw away the condoms.
No, I mean, there was a lot of restraint for sure, and I was absolutely and decimated by certain paragraphs, as I said, sobbed at the end. But I do think the flotsam of my grief, like we need to put that in the dustbin of history as far as phrases go.
I do think that is also just so Portland.
There's that's
just
the Portland writer stuff.
That's the Portland writer stuff.
If you were in the community out there, literally, you might get it.
You're the bad art friend.
Like, I do feel like, right, she's at her big rumpus meetup and they're all like at a big table. And like, that is what someone is being like.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, if you've spent time with these kinds of, I'll say, writer community types, there's almost a competitiveness with which people divulge painful parts of their past. Mm. Like, it's sort of like the equivalent of like comedians being at a show and like doing meta comedy about being a comedian or something. It's like writers being like, let's see, what else? I was molested? Is that anything?
Yeah, they're like, how many times?
I mean, it is, I feel like it's the kind of reverse to the generation of Didion pretenders that have infiltrated New York.
Of
and like,
course.
Where all of their essays are very just like, it's more the style of the prose is so. And then I stared and I lit a cigarette. I thought, I took off my glove. I took off the other glove. I waited for the door to open. It never did. And it's very just like, nothing's happening. You're just describing things in a really kind of cold, sober way and hoping that it sounds profound.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, this is more, I'm going to divulge.
When I found Tiny Beautiful Things, the show, I didn't read the book, way more trauma porn, where like, I was crying every episode of that show, but I was also like...
You were crying at Tiny Beautiful Things? Okay.
Yeah. Okay, weird lesbian. Anyway.
Yeah. Weird lesbian. Yeah, I was. Look. Some of us, emotions hit differently.
Wait,
okay?
I feel like I haven't watched it, but I'm surprised you're surprised, because I feel like the entire point of that show is like
to make you cry. Yeah.
Isn't just like a series of basically like dramatized letters?
I guess I wasn't buying it, and it was just to like the eighth Hulu remake of Friends with Money, and I was kind of just
like I was taken by Han's performance.
It felt a little paint by numbers to me.
That's what I'm saying. Watching it, I was like, oh, stop making me cry. Like, I was getting on the boat.
So since we're on the topic of Tiny Beautiful Things, I do have a bomb to drop that I've already told both of you, which is that I saw the stage adaptation starring and written by Nia Vardalos.
Oh, my God.
It's Nia Vardalos.
It's Nia Vardalos.
Now there's a Cheryl Strayed.
Yes, that's a Cheryl Strayed.
I'm ready for a Greek Cheryl Strayed.
What if Cheryl Strayed was Greek? Okay, yeah.
She changed her name again. She's like Stamatopoulos.
Oh, wait, because did we reveal this on the episode yet, that she made up Strayed?
Because she strayed.
Right.
Because she strayed, and it's after she gets divorced, and she's like crying in this like hole in the wall divorce office. And
with her tattooed divorce lawyer.
Yeah, and just like
in downtown Minneapolis.
And they're getting divorced, and she just goes, I love him, you know? I love him. Sobbing. And the like notary woman is like, I know. I know you do. And then they get their forms and they're like, we can do any name. And she's like, then me and my soon-to-be ex-husband, Paul, just joked for hours. She's always been like, my soon-to-be ex-husband and I were joking for hours, and then we fucked in the bed of my truck. And then I said goodbye on a side road in Minneapolis.
I feel like the two most
Pacific Northwest writer community things about her are A, that she changed her name to Strayed, and B, that she got matching tattoos after getting divorced from her husband.
Wait, but go back to the Vardalos adaptation.
So it's Mia Vardalos.
And she's like, I'm going to adapt.
I'm going to adapt this.
Where was the production?
Some like off-Broadway theater in New York. It was, I want to say, like almost 10 years ago. I went with like my ex's parents when I first moved to New York.
Oh, wow. Ex's parents to the New York.
Did you guys get matching tattoos on the eve of your breakup?
Yes. And they said, God hates fags. Inspired by our favorite musician, Michelle Schacht.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
The moment I sobbed, and I don't know if this will anger you also, Stephen, in the book.
I'm already furious.
I think I know what you're going to say.
The horse.
Yeah, exactly. I was literally about to say horse.
You know what? Yeah. I almost cried at horse, but I didn't let myself because...
That's like you're allowed to cry.
Hand over my mouth. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I don't know, for some reason, I was so with her and her journey that I like couldn't even cry yet. And I actually didn't cry until the first time that she cries on the trail.
That's wow. So you.
And it was like when she said I finally cried, I was like, I suddenly saw myself finally crying. People should read the book because the horse part is crazy.
I'm not going to say what happened to the horse, but you can probably guess when I'm saying the horse.
The horse? It's not great for the horse.
It was her mom's horse.
Yeah.
And as someone whose mom has rode horses. And as someone whose...
Sister has rode horses.
Yeah. So it hit as a family member of a horse girl. That hit really close to home.
The part where I finally cried was when... She's on the PCT, as she is for the entire
Wait, you're like, so
oh, I love that part.
She's hiking.
And there's wildfires, and they're creating these most incredible sunsets. Mm-hmm. And she's so taken by the sunset. She's so amazed by it. She starts thinking about her dad and how abusive he was. And she goes, that was my father. It amazed me, again, of all his wild things, that his failure to love me should have always been the wildest thing of all. But on that night, as I gaze out over the darkening land, 15-some nights out on the PCT, it occurred to me that I didn't have to be amazed by him anymore. There were so many other amazing things in this world. They opened up inside of me like a river, like I didn't know I could take a breath, and then I breathed. And then she starts crying. And they weren't tears of joy, and they weren't tears of sadness. She goes, I was crying because I was full.
Period.
I mean...
Which, of course, harkens back to her describing herself at the beginning of the book as the girl with a hole in her heart or something. Or like a hole inside of her.
A hole.
Well, of course, as women, you know, we all have the hole that can never be filled.
Celebrity Book Club.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pacific Crest segments. What does she wear?
What does she wear?
How does she live? And are we doing...
About...
Cheryl Current? Are we doing...
I think let's do Cheryl now.
Yeah.
There's a part that I think might help us illustrate what she wears now.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's early on in the book. She's talking about fantasizing about moving to New York to become a writer.
Oh, yes.
Which we learn you actually don't need to do, and she didn't write when she lived there. And she's talking about her life that might happen when she goes... She's like, the real me was beneath that, pulsing under all the things I used to think I knew. How I'd finish my BA in June, and a couple months later off we'd go. How we'd rent an apartment in the East Village or Park Slope, places I'd only imagined and read about. How I'd wear funky ponchos with adorable knitted hats and cool boots while becoming a writer in the same romantic down-and-out way that so many of my literary heroes had.
She could not be more funky, badass boots. Poncho. I mean, her boobs are like really big. I think she's like tight jeans, kind of flared, awesome fucking boot, maybe Fry boots.
Yeah.
I also think she's...
She has the money for Fry.
Well, it's Portland mom. So it's like stretch denim and keen shoes.
Oh, you think she's more like sensible lesbian shoe about it?
And also like long sleeves, like slight decollete, like long sleeve.
What you're
describing sounds like the Pioneer Woman, like that kind of clothing, yeah. Like QVC level, like scoop neck.
I think scoop neck, and also like a bag that has one too many. It's like leather strap,
hobo
the canvas
bag.
I definitely think she's
I think she's hobo bag. I actually do think that she's living her poncho fantasy though, yeah. Don't you? And I think that the tops are a little bit sexier than you're describing. I think they're a little more form fitting. I think they're maroon. I think they're deep purples. You know, because she was afraid of the deep purple lipstick that she finds at that co-op, at the like expensive co-op in the town with the Deadhead Festival.
I love her going like Sephora mode, like being so samples, but it's at the co-op. I think she also like is like she's putting on like a tattered. I do think ponchos are involved or just dusters, but I think it's tight tank top, cleavage, lacy bra. Because when she gets clothes that she sends to herself later on, she's like faded 501s. Black lace bra.
You're saying you think she's over her sexy era, George?
I
think it is age-appropriate 55-year-old Portland sexy. Like, I do think there is some cleavage to the L.L. Bean long-sleeve form-fitting shirt.
Just, yeah, okay, form-fitting. The words I wanted to hear.
Yes.
I
no, think it's form-fitting.
Hugging her
and it might be layered in a sexy way, like tank top and then... low sweater.
Sweater that's lower than the
sweater. Her boobs are, her nipples are out, and the sweater goes under them.
Don't you also kind of think that she's like the top customer at like Portland's only dry bar?
Yeah, like her hair is
her
blown.
Hair does look great. Yeah.
It's blown the fuck out. She's wearing a silk maroon Kenley.
That's what I'm saying. It's dark colors to offset those icy blue eyes.
Sure.
And I think she's also, because she is like a hiker, she's so gear closet with the husband with all their like Keens and the boots.
Yeah. And all their kayaks.
I mean, when Cheryl Strayed walks into the Portland REI, attention. No. Okay. Oh. Everyone runs.
No, it's like, literally it's like Martha Stewart walking into the Four Seasons in 1995. Yeah,
it's like Woody Allen playing the sax at Bemelmans. Yeah. Is it the sax that he plays?
In Manhattan?
And I think she's
don't
very,
write
like,
in.
I think
yeah,
she's
he, like, famously.
She has like her total nasty underwear. And I think she's like, is turning on her husband of now 26 years with some like matching lingerie and like garter belts.
But I guess that's what I'm like, stretch denim, big belt,
the sexy, belt is huge.
I agree, sexy, form-fitting, purple or maroon top. Okay. And then I would say she literally will wear the homemade jewelry that a fan gave her at a signing.
Yes.
She won't like throw it away like Elizabeth Gilbert would.
I knew you were gonna about to say Liz Gilbert because it was on the tip. I was just like, that's what the Liz Gilbert. I think Liz Gilbert would be like, this is amazing. She puts it in a box.
Exactly.
And then, like,
exactly.
She kind of hopes it.
But I think Cheryl would be like, this was given to me by a woman who lost everything in a fire.
And that's when I wrote tiny little beautiful perfect fires.
Okay, what does she eat? Okay, I think she is quinoa stir fry,
CSA.
But I think she CSA, but I still think she loves a big bison burger on Sundays.
I kind of think that she is going to the whatever the coal oven pizzeria in Portland is, like at least once a week with her boys.
Yeah, and her non-binary awesome child.
That she was celebrating on National Daughter's Day.
Yeah.
Does she have a non-binary child?
She had a daughter with short hair.
In Tiny Beautiful Things, she does have a lesbian daughter who's like having threesomes.
Oh, right. Nia consulted on that. There's one point in the book where she's like, what I was craving was a Caesar salad with chicken on it.
This is why she's like girl dinner, because her dream dinner that she's having in the book is
fries,
green salad and fries.
Yes. And she's like, the yin and yang of my personality, my needs and wants was fresh, but also fried.
Isn't that crazy?
It's just like, it's the most normal girl dinner thing ever. I want a salad with fries.
Yeah.
And how does she live?
It's a big wooden table. It's comfy, but it's orange.
A lot of wood. And bright color. I agree with the orange.
I think she has a beautiful home. And I think there's stones. And I feel like is this crazy to say she has a koi pond?
Okay, that is crazy. You're only saying that because we went to the Japanese gardens in Portland and we both loved it.
Oh, I actually didn't even put that together.
I think that was in there.
It's a Pacific Northwest style to have a koi pond.
She could be a little like small statues in the backyard.
I think she's definitely Buddha. I think she's definitely,
yes, Buddha
statues.
Definitely Buddha.
I do wonder if maybe she's a little bit of a hoarder.
I think it's a little bit messy for sure.
Yeah.
And I think her husband's getting mad at her for it being messy.
And there's like piles of papers and manuscripts and other scripts. But
her office is her safe space. She like retreats there.
It's a tiny, beautiful
mess.
She has
a separate little like sauna that he built for her in the backyard, and that's her safe space. Why don't you try that on first eyes?
Does she go to a massage place or have someone come to her place to massage her?
She goes to a massage place. And I think she has a smaller
SUV. She has a woman-owned one.
I guess like I feel like the new Subaru
is... but women's staff.
Totally.
She gets in her big Forester.
Don't you think she's like more Prius? I feel like she's classic Prius.
I think she's Prius, yeah.
I'm seeing her in SUV and I feel like
she's upset about the environment.
But all the SUVs now are like technically like...
Oh, she's so my parents, like, she has...
What she has like a gas efficient...
They're Mustang.
Yeah,
they're electric Mustang.
Because she was like, I will not buy a Tesla.
Yeah, she's not. And she also... One of the things she said to Brooke Shields is that, you know, she was already, in her mind, a quote-unquote successful writer when Wild came out. She was like, when I dreamed of success as a writer, I didn't think of a lot of money. I just thought, like, this is at least my full-time job. I had written a novel. I had my syndicated column in, like, 4 alt-weeklies in the Pacific Northwest, whatever. And so she was like, I'm so happy that when I finally did get that level of success, I was a grown-up. I was, like, 42. And it did not affect how I live my life. It just meant I had more financial security. She was like, I still sent my kids to public school. I didn't move to L.A. And so I do think she's more... I don't think she's bought a BMW.
No.
Absolutely not, honey. No, she's living within her means, and she's living very comfortably within those means.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, who are you in the book?
Okay, George, I mean, now that you went to Iceland, I guess I'm just like...
I'm Cheryl.
Are you Cheryl?
I feel like... The trip is not sounding very
no,
Cheryl.
It's not Cheryl. I think I'm the guy who writes for the Hobo Times, who is completing a PhD in anthropology.
That's with the Hobo Times guy. I don't know if your car is that messy, though.
That guy was fair.
Was so...
My car...
Your house, it's not a...
My car is looking hobo times right
now. You're a little hobo times.
Well, no, I think
you're the Bob Marley t-shirt.
I'm Bob Marley t-shirt, but I'm also Cheryl.
You are the literal t-shirt.
Yeah, I am the t-shirt. There was a moment when I was visiting my sister in Austin, and I was like going to thrift stores, and I got so confused, so I just basically was walking along the highway, Cheryl style, and I was dressed in all black, and these very kind of like Mumford & Sons coated brown boots that I used to have, and I was walking along the highway in Austin. It was so sweaty, and I came to an underpass, and a bunch of guys who were kind of bridge people waved me over because they also thought I was a fellow
hobo.
Like, hobo, basically. And they were like, hey, come on over here. And I just kind of waved and I realized kind of I looked of...
Homeless experience.
Homeless
drifter
experience. It was more drifter vibes.
Right.
Like, I got off the bus and I'm making my way to, you know.
To the latest trash can fire.
So I'm Cheryl at that moment.
I think I feel like I could see myself backpacking, even though I've never done it, which is also very
but
Cheryl.
But you've been to
Banff. Because
she
has that quote where she's like, I've been backpacking, realized that I've actually haven't been backpacking. I've been on like week-long hiking trips, but staying in like little cabins along the way.
Oh, but that is so much more than I've ever done.
And yeah, I feel like you've done the most backpacking.
That is shocking to me. I think of you as so not backpacking.
Urbane.
I think you are Cheryl making metallic tape boots out of her sandals and being like, okay, these are kind of chic.
That literally is me. That's so me, because have you seen my wallet?
Oh, maybe that's what, I think I have.
Yeah.
Is it a tape wallet?
No, it's just rubber bands.
Oh.
And I feel like, Steven, you're like always so proud. It's like, yeah, it's not like you can't afford a wallet.
Oh, sure,
you're
sure,
just
sure.
Like, yeah, if I was just done rubber bands.
I'm a little low on cash right now, as you can see.
Well, the pack hasn't come in yet. Your box hasn't come in.
You need to get your box.
My resupply box to come to the post office.
Okay, to me, by the way, sidebar with the boxing, I was like, I guess she's trying to piecemeal out her 20s. But I was like, why not start with just a little bit more cash?
So for everyone listening, she would get a box at every stop, and every box would have a $20 bill in it. And so
it was 1995, so that could go a little bit further. But listen, if something happens, if it fucking rains, your pack gets stolen by a bear, you don't want all that money to go missing.
Or if you get robbed.
So it's an insurance policy.
Yeah.
You don't want to have everything on you.
But I would still give myself more than 20.
I guess it was just all the money she had. But still, I was like, can we pack it a little more with cash?
I was kind of obsessed with how low on cash she was. Like, she really just actually had to
And, like,
really...
you did it.
She does a ton of hitchhiking.
Yes, but she also never asks for money. I kept waiting for her to be like,
yeah, okay,
it pains me to
Paul.
Say this, but, like, I'm... Or even just, like, all these friends she made along the way, they would have lent her some money.
Well, it's always, like, people, like, drinking beer at, like, the lakeside bar or whatever.
And her ordering ice water.
Yeah. And they're like, don't you want a rum and coke? And she's like, no, water for me. But then, like, does get offered drinks, like Hawaiian screwdrivers.
I wonder if this is actually, like, a Scandinavian thing, because she's from Minnesota, and maybe she's descendant from Scandinavian culture, which reminds me of that viral Twitter thread from 6 months ago about how Scandinavian culture is not about lending things, because it, like, creates an honor debt.
Yeah, she is so Robin in that way.
She's very Robin. She doesn't want the honor debt.
Totally.
I mean, what really saved her is that REI has an amazing satisfaction policy, and they send her new boots.
Yeah.
That were bigger.
I wonder if they still have that policy.
I bet they do.
Then you could stay unsatisfied and then go over to Grail.
Oh, you just know they got rid of that policy 1 month after this book came out. Everyone is calling me like,
I love that it's also the gay that tells her about their policy. Of course,
he's
gays
like,
know
girl.
All the customers.
Yeah, he's like, honey, sit down. We have to talk.
1-800-REI, baby.
Okay, I give this book, honestly, 4.9 boots out of 5. It's a real book. And if you want to read it.
You want to be like shaken and inspired? Like, I give it like, I'm going to say, fuck it. 5 Caesar salads and fries out of 5.
I agree.
I was like, this is a goddamn book.
It fucking broke me. And it's really, really beautiful. And it's about the death of parents. It's about trials and tribulations.
It's about
and
divorce,
love and divorce
and heroin.
And things that, you know, we all will experience.
Mm-hmm. Especially heroin.
Yes, especially heroin.
It's about like literally not having headphones as you walk.
Yeah, totally. Literally. I give it 5 bloody toenails out of 5. Mm.
George, it's been such a
George, thank you so much for coming on our show.
Absolute dream come true. And thank you, it must be said, Lily, for recommending we do this book.
I mean, I see you posting out there these photos of Reese and Wild, and I was like, well, we're going to do Wild. We're doing Wild. In honor of you.
Yeah. And
thank you
I will
for inspiring
say,
me.
Cheryl did comment on my Halloween photos and said, stay wild, George.
Stay wild.
But also, when we did our Straighter Lab show in Portland, we tried to get her as a guest, and she did not do it. But to her credit,
we tried to get Tanya Harding as a guest. She also never
responded to my DM.
So Cheryl responded, said, like, I can't do it, I have a prior commitment, but I love the premise, and then followed Straighter Lab on Instagram.
Oh, that's sweet.
She's a real forever, she's a guiding light in my life, I would say.
Yeah.
We love you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl, for telling women's stories.
Thank you, George, for telling women's stories and hearing them.
Thank you, guys.
All right, okay. Ladies.
Stay with us.
Best! This podcast was executive produced by Christina Everett, who died in 1957 when the Pacific Crest Trail was still only a dream in her little pocket. It was produced by Darby Masters, who, along with Clinton Churchill Clark, sort of came up with the idea after Christina initially came up with it, and then they kind of took on her legacy and were like, okay, we're really going to try and take this story to Congress. And then it was actually Abu Zafar who was supervising the congressional hearings, but also producing the podcast, but also doing the hearing stuff. And this was like in the 70s now. Eventually, they did designate the Pacific Crest Trail a national trail in 1994, along with Stephen Phillips Forrest, who did the music for the trail. And Teddy Blanks did that graphic design for like the trailheads and all the wayfinding, which has helped folks. And in the humid shade of Ponderosa Pines, we did initially conceive of this podcast and then start producing it with Prologue Projects, who now no longer works on the trail. But we wish them the best of luck in their future endeavors. And we also wish that you go to patreon.com/cbcthepod and subscribe, because then you can have additional content that you can experience and enjoy, or just sort of let it wash over you and not really even take it in. And that is only $5 a month. So that comes strongly recommended from many experts. And I just want to say thank you again for listening to the episode, but especially the credits, because credit is so important now more than ever. I love you.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.